Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource supported by our listeners. To find out how and learn more about our program, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support. Now on with the show.
This is part 2 of episode 75, where we are discussing TVA and the Grassroots, a study in the sociology of formal organization by Philip Selznick. So welcome back to part 2 on Selznick, and we finished up the first part talking about unintended consequences, the path dependency that led TVA into a direction of a more conservative organization. And this is very much related to the institutional environment within in which the TVA exists and operates. And there are many, many probably relations to current discussions in new institutional theory. So I can mention some of them. I mean, within the new institutional theory, there is that's been developed since the 1980s, of course. There is the work of DiMaggio and Powell that many know. And following up on that, there is this whole streams, you might say, within the new institutional theory that's focusing on institutional logics, very much focusing on meanings, norms that come from several grand institutions, you might say, in society, the state logic, the professional logic, the market logic, the community logic, which is, of course, very relevant for this case as well. And they are not addressed as logics in the book of Selznick, of course, but they are visible within the book. And the workings, their operations as logics are very much come through in the book. So that's I think, one stream that's very relevant to connect to.
Yes, the question is, I think, the connection and the broken links, so to speak, right? And as far as I understand, Selznick was quite critical of what he saw some of the development that institutional theory and the so-called new institutional took, right? There's this famous essay in which he discusses exactly them. One of the aspects of these discontinuities or connections is that this book, and I think a lot of Selznick's work, is very much putting problems in the word first, right? All the things we discussed, and we can, you know, explore more of them, because the dilemmas, and he calls them exactly that, these tensions on dilemmas are, you know, fundamental to organizing in this case of centralization, decentralization, and how democracy can be, you know, realized. You know, they're still going on, right? So there is a concern with problems in the word first, not just the elaboration of vocabularies and the study of particular concepts, but the use of concepts, right, for particular tools. So in a way, do not institutionalize the concepts. Be aware of that. So there's the first layer, I think, of these differences and important developments that have taken place. But in a more theoretical level, and maybe it's connected, it has to do with the more concrete way in which Selznick talks about the environment. So the environment here, right, is not just a cognitive, social type of structure, right? It's the stakeholders, the farmers, the ecologists, you know, the people that live and work in this, the people that, you know, the constituency of the organization, the people that are giving resources, the central government that wants accountability, right? So it's a very concrete environment. And you can see that, and I think that is where it becomes very interesting on how some of the discussion he makes is the staffing, who is the people that gets hired, the extent in which certain ideas can be inculcated or not, or how they bring ideas and end up, you know, diffusing them. So again, it's the concrete environment. These ideal aspects, again, have name and surname. They are not just general, right? They are concerning particular the particular context and what the people are trying to accomplish and what they bring in terms of values, right? So it's more concrete in that term as well. Whereas I feel that the more institutional turn is more of a cognitive cultural aspect. And yes, trying to make account that organizations are in institutional environments, but, you know, it becomes a bit more diffuse because in a way, and also I think that's another important thing to say, the concrete challenge of organizing becomes less important because exactly in discussions about logics, it's some in part, a lot of the research program is about understanding the fields and how logics, you know, connect or disconnect or clash at the field level, which becomes a dissolution of the matter of organizing into a general discussion about, you know, social process, right? And in Selznick, it's still the concern of the social, but looking at the organizing, right?
No, but that's a great point you make, Pedro. I mean, I hadn't looked at that way, but I think the concreteness that of his descriptions are maybe at some level missing in current analysis of institutional logics work. So I mean, who are the proponents of a certain logic? That's very visible in his work, and that sometimes gets obscured in current research. Then we're just putting the logics up front rather than the actors that infuse these logics. So I think that's a very, very valid point to make, Pedro.
Oh, sorry, I forgot the other thing that So besides the discussion of the kind of theoretical toolkit that Selznick is using and where is it based on, the other thing is that he's not just talking about institutions, right? But institutionalization, which is different from some of the discussion that we have today. And it's exactly, it's not just the fact that there are, of course, there is an institutional context for organizations, but the particular tools, as he calls it, and it could be procedures, the formal organization, the strategies become institutionalized, becomes they gain, one of the ways in which they can be institutionalized is because they get impregnated by values. They get, there is a different reason. They're important and relevant beyond just their concrete, practical, problem-solving, rational things that they can bring, right? They become an end in itself, right? They gain this magic outlook. And he discussed other forms in which all elements of organizations become institutionalized. But it's exactly that, you know, again, trying to be concrete. So not just say that, yes, culture matters, norms matter, there is mimicry, things are happening, but, you know, looking at the particular way in which we organize and how and when and in what ways this gain, this veneer, this particular value.
I think the work is even actually maybe closer to the institutional work approach. I mean, if you look at the TVA, there's a lot of discussion on what the agriculturists do, what their actions are, what they try to do to maintain the position of the local institutes. They maintain actually the institute, the local institutionalized aspect to which the TVA is relating itself to. So in a way, his description is much more in line with the institutional work approach than the institutional logics approach, I would say. And I've worked with both of them, and what for me is a very strong and also interesting aspect of the institutional work approach is that you really look at the individuals within institutions and organizations, and you look at their actions, their contributions, their struggles, their contestation towards one another, and that's very much in line with many of the stories that he tells about TVA.
And related to that, there is this paragraph in the essay that Selznick published in ASQ, Administrative Science Quarterly, in 96 that Leonardo shared with us. The key point of this essay is we shouldn't make such a sharp distinction. We shouldn't forget the contribution of old institutionalism. And he is, you know, almost complaining that he is always cited as being the old. And here, let me read a bit what he writes here. I postulated a distinction between organization and institution. As an organization is institutionalized, it tends to take a special character and to achieve a distinctive competence, or perhaps a trained or built-in incapacity. Monitoring the process of institutionalization is its cost as well as its benefits is a major responsibility of leadership. Thus, institutional theory traces the emergence of distinctive forms, processes, strategies, outlooks, and competences as they emerge from patterns of organizational interaction and adaptation. Such patterns must be understood as responses to both internal and external environments. You know, this is exactly what he did in the TVA, what he did in his book.
I will start with a provocation, and then I'm going to build into a new theme, which
Go
is
ahead.
About institutional work, right? I want to insist on that, and maybe, you know, I'm not an expert in the literature, but I do know some of it, right? And having read Selznick, I can really see the contrast of paradigm, because institutional work would say that people work in our, you know, just the kind of work that people do to enact, maintain, disrupt institutions, whatever, right? In Selznick, it seems that the question starts with work in itself. So the way people do in order to run an election, deliver healthcare, distribute resources for farmers. And in that work, there are institutional aspects that complicate, take apart, influence, and so on and so forth, right? So again, it's trying to put the work and organization first and using the institution as a perspective. Whereas in the overall institutional discussion, and that has been recognized by people, you know, there are essays discussing that, the institution has become the phenomenon to be explained, right? Not the perspective to explain something else. So that is an important distinction, that here is the work and the organized work and the institution aspects are a tool to understand what is happening, right? So I think there's a fundamental gem and insight from Selznick that got a little bit lost. And on base of that, then I wanted to say something, right, regarding to what we were talking about at the beginning, because not to be the person about formalization bureaucracy all the time, but I cannot hold myself too much. It is true, as we said at the beginning, that Selznick himself says it's important to look at the informal. But what does the informal here means, right? And there is a little bit about exactly, as Greta was saying, the work of leadership in trying to understand the ways in which, as organizations happen, all these kinds of politics, coalitions, issues, values end up influencing what is happening, right? And he says that in the same essay, I think a little bit, that the challenge is to not just look at cognition, culture, but looking also at the form organization, at the norms that exist, the procedures, and how culture becomes to be a part of that. So not ignore the form organization, but what is coexisting, complicating, influencing, infusing all the building blocks of organizing with the search of ideas. And I think in the process, exactly what he shows is not just that the informal is all, right? That basically people are just running around and doing things as they please according to certain social constraints of some sort, but that they are manipulating, infusing, understanding a particular way, seeing a particular procedure for more than what actually needs to be. And exactly, the leadership is about having awareness of that and trying to be, and he says that, you know, being reflective and trying to think in a dynamic way to assess, does it really is achieving the goal that is intended? And I think that is the one of the biggest heritage of Selznick, is exactly this awareness that to manage, right, and or to understand organizations as to continuously question the extent the tools are really achieving what they're supposed to achieve or not. What is the other aspects, call it logics, call it interests, that are seeping in into the way that we are making decisions? What are, how the criteria are pushing to see some constituencies, going back to the case of, you know, what kind of farmers are getting this money and resources, because we have certain criteria for that, right? So it's continuous this questioning of what are the formal elements we have in place accomplishing, given all the other things that get stacked upon it, right?
Really, really good points, Pedro. And I'm just thinking about the whole other literature to which Selznick's book is speaking to. That's this empirically, the literature focusing on all forms of, you know, post-organizing, where you have open organizational forms, you have open strategy, you have open innovation, and, you know, you have, like, citizen participation, you have, like, involving customers in your organizational process. So we see that where the book starts with, like, you know, this question of, you know, to what extent can you be democratic? It's also a question that is very relevant today as organizations experiment with more open organizational forms. We have all the technology tools at hand, and we see the possibility. You know, I'm studying, you know, the adoption of what they now call these open talent models in doing work, bringing the crowd in, bringing external experts into the organization. We discussed some of the work that Hila Lifshitz-Assaf has been doing on crowdsourcing and these type of competitions. You have the work of Richard Withington and others on open strategy, bringing crowd in to form your strategy. And to all of this, Selznick has messages. You know, he shows us, like, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there, but you also need to think about the consequences. They will also co-shape where you go as an organization. There's lots of opportunity there, and he does say that as well. But he also says it also has challenges. Putting that literature next to, you know, this work of Selznick might be a very nice exercise to look at, okay, to what extent do the challenges and the unintended consequences that Selznick identified, to what extent can we empirically generalize them to these other settings that companies are experimenting with now?
It's a fair point, Greta. This idea of open innovation and getting all these parties on board and on side of your organization is very much related to having more voices involved, having your constituencies involved, having more creativity, better ideas. But then Selznick shows that it's also kind of really impacting your organization and your goals you can achieve and the paths you can walk actually as an organization. So I think it's a great point that you raised, Greta.
And perhaps also thinking about the leadership challenges that come with it. You know, organizations, especially in this pandemic, we have all the tools to bring people outside in. But do we have the leadership skills to actually manage that and to understand and foresee what it will imply for the organization?
Yeah, this is interesting because I think it's a great achievement of Selznick to pose this distinction between organization and its institutions and show us how our organization becomes an institution, and it's interesting how this is so influential today in business literature, because just to mention one bestseller for a business like Jim Collins in saying that, oh, the companies that was built to last was that the companies that have something beyond profit, that is an institution. So this is important. Business that has some values, that business that got some kind of image in front of society, for example, that is something that will last. So I don't know if they read Selznick, but it's incredible how today we are saying that an institution is something more important than an organization. But he shows how an organization becomes an institution, and this is maybe a kind of, well, I can ask, which organization doesn't have a mission statement, a value or something like that to say that, oh, we are here in a purpose that is not only profit and to please the shareholders, for example.
So I have a similar reaction feeling when I was reading, right? So by institution, you mean having a social mission, right? And that's exactly, I think it's almost striking to realize as we read the book of how big things that we take for granted today about caring about ecology, trying to think beyond just achieving a goal, but considering the impact for society. And of course, you would expect this to be a bigger concern into a public organization. But many of the way the question was posed and some of the attempts TVA has made seems to be almost contemporary, right? Exactly, this idea that is at the underpinning of the organization, that it should be the Tennessee Valley Authority, meaning should not be just the authority for electricity, fertilizer, or, you know, water work or whatever, but trying to have a systemic integrated perspective, because there was a recognition that these things are interdependent and the way in which you could, you know, prevent all sorts of negative externalities, including ecological ones, was to try to think in a more coherent, holistic way, right? Which, if you think about it, people are discussing today about patient-centered healthcare or how business exactly can think beyond just, you know, producing technological parts, but seeing how this fits the supply chain and what is the long cycle this has and so on and so forth. It's like extremely timely. So I think that's one of the things that showcase, again, the power of the classics and how these aspirations have a long history, but at the same time, the challenge to realize them is actually much more complicated than I think sometimes we imagine.
Yeah, I think many organizations strive in a way to, of course, have a strong mission and strive for unity as an organization. That this is their glue within the organization. And to me, I mean, Salesforce very, very much shows also that, you know, this unity can be at odds as pursuing the original goals of the organization. So an organization's mission could become clouded by its strategy. I mean, that's what he shows in his book. And that poses a question also to many leaders and managers in organizations that kind of have been educated in this way. In business schools, in practice, we need to have this mission. We need to have unity as an organization. But if striving for unity, in the case of TVA, striving only for the grassroots administration, clouds your actual goals as an organization, that poses a real challenge for managers. What to do if a unity and strategy stand in the way of the mission of your organization? That's a real struggle for people in organizations.
So I think that what Selznick would say is a bit of the Merton question, which is also, you know, the principle of the Columbia School, is unity for whom? And whose unity, from where, social mission? Because I think that the book has very much just convinced me even further of the strength, right? The analytical possibilities of organizational theory, research, and why we do the things we do. It's exactly, I think it gives you this capacity to lift the veil and see what we think is taken for granted and necessary. There are reasons, historic, social, that we have come to see it in such a way as a necessary thing. The way we think that unity should be achieved, and we all agree that's important, well, what are the particular aspects, interests, varieties of unities that are being advanced in running an organization in a certain way, right? Or framing the problem in a certain way. So it doesn't give any kind of answer, but I think it creates a toolkit, a list of sensitivities through which to confront this challenge, which is a very practical one.
I agree with that. And perhaps we can bring in this vocabulary of living beings, adaptive systems, organizations as adaptive systems. Perhaps we can bring that in again, because what Selznick shows is, you know, you can have a very strong doctrine or a very strong ideology. The organization is going to take turns and shifts. You cannot prevent it from happening, because the people that join, the values, their own interests, the politics they bring into it, and the interactions that happen within the organization and with external parties will shape what they inherently do. And he also mentions that, you know, people never set out what they're tasked to do. They always set out that and what they want to do. It's always bigger than just their task. I found that very powerful. Thinking about that, I think, you know, besides building theoretically, I think there's a huge opportunity here for more applied research. So when you think about, you know, managing the commons, thinking about how to tackle climate change, we all realize that we need to have these types of approaches that transcend the boundaries of organizations, transcend the boundaries of states, and transcend the boundaries of continents here. It's way beyond the scope of the TVA, but it shows we have to do it with the people. You have to do it with the organizations, for instance, tackling climate change. But then the challenge is there, how do you keep a focus, knowing that the people that get on board will also shape it? And that's where I see having that knowledge now, how can we make sure how to keep people engaged, how to keep people still wanting to contribute, For instance, also in crowdsourcing, that's a key challenge, you know, when people contribute to an innovation, but then it's not being built, they get disengaged. Think about the climate change conversation, you know, how do we make sure we will reduce carbon emissions collectively? We all want it, but why is it not happening? Here, I feel like having more applied research to think, how do you lead such engagements and go beyond applying insights from org theory about how we know how to organize processes, applying it at these higher levels to these bigger societal questions. I see a huge opportunity there where this book might provide some insight.
Yeah, there were recently in the new organization theory journal also articles on what organization theory can add to grand challenges, right? And that's really what you're adding here. And I think that's exactly where organization theory has something to offer. It's often a very small discipline, right? And it's not often found as something that can really add something to these challenges, but we know we can. And I'm also seeing developments that other disciplines are actually using our theories, using our findings, but also starting to connect really with organizational theories. I think that's a very good opportunity from these classics, but also other more recent findings in our discipline to add that perspective. Because in the end, everything has to be organized to achieve anything. So yes, we have something to say there.
We do, but to go back to what we started, I think that we're going to require not maybe a paradigm shift, but a little bit of a sensitivity shift, right? Or research agenda shift. Because as we just said, these kind of research and insights from Selznick come from the concrete engagement of the reality for the challenge of organizing, right? Whereas, as Selznick says himself in the essay Between Old and New Institutionalism, a lot of the discussion has moved to theoretical problems, right? And I think it's important to realize that what is called today grand challenge, that it is an invented label from the UN, right, has always been the daily meal of social sciences. And in particular, the study of organizations, right? Karl Marx, Emile Durkheim, and Max Weber, the three founding fathers, were dealing with issues of modernity, alienation, industrialization, and all this kind of stuff, right? Or the Columbia School, Blau was studying agencies of the federal government that were trying to deliver poverty alleviation in part. Goldner studied an industrial factory, and there were a lot of issues in terms of labor related to that, right? And of course, Selznick, as we saw, is about the issue of democracy, distributing resources, having an ecological mentality in the way this is done. So it has always been part and parcel of the way both social sciences and organizational research has tried to understand. Think about it, right? From taxation to the UN, it's always about bureaucratic organizing in general, right? Realizing all that. From the pyramids to the space race. So of course we have something to say, but I think that's going to require a type of research that is willing, as Greta was saying, to engage with the reality of organizations, to be willing to address not just conceptual issues, but what Selznick calls the dilemmas and tensions of organizing.
Yeah, and in that sense, what I think is also needed to go along that line a little bit further is, an experience from myself. My research, I have a clear empirical focus. I'm studying how digital platforms impact work and impact labor markets and, you know, who makes a living and who doesn't. And in what way is work changing by adopting more digital technologies in it? And I've been criticized for it. They said it's not a very wise idea to have this empirical focus. If you want to publish in the big journals, you need to be part of a theoretical conversation. There is no empirical conversation for you. That's what people told me. In the way we have set up evaluation and promotion systems in the university context, where we are rated by 4-star publications trying to make theoretical contributions, perhaps we can stop for a moment and look back and look at, you know, what has the impact of the Columbia School been? It has been tremendous. And what did they do? Deep empirical fieldwork to come to new theoretical insights. But it started with that fieldwork. Get your hands dirty, understand your setting. and then look what theories fit and what is it that this setting is telling us that is new, that requires a little bit a different lens to understand it. It's letting the data speak rather than looking for the data that could speak through a particular theory you have selected up front. And by having that empirical focus and perhaps building bigger research teams around those empirical settings, then you can have impact. Building a collective around that helps you to translate your insights into practice, into policy, which I feel is more difficult if you start with building those communities around theories. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, again, not to be the Selznick expert in the room, but he would say that we have institutionalized the tools through which we organize academic work. Right. And it's unfortunately not only institutionalized, but fetishized. And it has not only been impregnated with a particular value beyond its use, but it has displaced the goals of, you know, the reason for doing social science. Right. Putting ourselves in the mirror through Selznick.
Just to make some relation with a later episode that we did the episode on Chandler. And if we are going to talk about institutions, we have to show these things on the ground. Like, it's interesting to show how they came up, how they become an institution, and not say that institution matters. And I said that in this episode that we got used to say institutions matter, but we don't know how they come to life, how as an institution is working in a daily operation and some how this thing it's really happening. I may say that bad mood essay on new institutionalism, because he's saying that I say that everything that is you were saying I say better, and you are forgetting to say how things works. Like I did on TVA. So I don't say that everything has to be that way, but that is very interesting to see how we can tell a story about the institution and show how it operates on a very specific way and how this will evolve a long time. I think this is very interesting. Selznick is very, very successful in doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard groundwork that's been shown in the book is, for me, is also a reason that when I work with students, I want to read these kind of texts. Well, maybe not Selznick, because it's so hard and dry, but you know, these ethnographies are very much something that I work with students. I don't know if you know the book on implementation by Pressman and Wildavsky. It's also related to this kind of challenge, more focused on policy implementation, but very much related to the actual situations on the ground. The Kunda book that we discussed in the podcast, of course, I mean, that's a very, very good ethnography. That's also hard groundwork by Gideon Kunda, but really shows the essence of these organizational practices that and how they relate to the actual social challenges that we face. So that's, I think, that's the strength of this approach, and it's also something that, yeah, I think Greta has a point. Let's go back to these authors and see what they offer to us that's already in place and how we can use that in working with challenges.
If I may add, Mike, it was just a little, I read this book, and I think it goes this spirit of Selznick that the author is Catherine Turco, and this book, The Conversational Firm, Rethinking Bureaucracy in the Age of Social Media, is interesting because she's on the company asking employees how things work in there and how this is different from what we think in organizational theory. So she goes back to Weber and say, oh, what will be the organization in this new technology and this new economy? So it's very painful sometimes too, because it's really a dense description, let's say this way, but it's going, I think, show us a big picture of how an organization, a particular organization, we can link with the broader questions and the big questions that we are discussing now, especially in this new technology thing, like Greta was saying, platform. So how organizations are dealing with this new technology is disrupting and so on.
So thinking about that, you know, so we talked about how Selznick tries to push our noses down to the central tensions of organizing, right? And I think what is interesting, as we said, that a lot of this feels very contemporary, and feels very contemporary in light of the pandemic. Because many of the challenges that are involved in what he's describing apply today. You know, if you just stay with the US context, because that's where the TVA was based, the questions of centralization or decentralization are still super relevant. And there are buckets of evidence of how a lot of the response to the COVID-19 pandemic was, complicated, to say the least, by the fact that states were trying to buy all kind of resources and competing with the central government. There was no kind of uniform kind of action, right? There is also issues related to cooptation. When the Trump government was in place, there were tensions within the government because, for example, Anthony Fauci, which is one of the important people, right? You could very much see that it was a cooptation in which there was someone that was needed for social legitimacy, but at the same time, what a person like this was able to do or not was complicated by the apparatus that it was in place and vice versa. So all these kind of dilemmas still are present when we try to achieve any kind of complex, large social goal, responding to a pandemic, delivering vaccines, developing vaccines, right? Trying to diffuse messages about how to deal with the pandemic and take cautionary action for it. It's organizational through and through. And many of the dilemmas, unintended consequences, and recalcitrant nature of organizing that Selznick was able to unearth in this book still apply, which just goes to say, as we were saying, the importance of trying to understand organizations.
I agree. And perhaps on a positive note, thinking about, you know, grassroots approaches to the huge vaccination challenge. For instance, in the US, I believe like Disneyland completely transformed itself to become like a huge vaccination center. And that perhaps also makes us think about the discrepancy with where we've had a more centralized approach. And we've in many, many countries, we haven't seen the vaccination initiatives coming off the ground. Perhaps, a grassroots approach might have been more beneficial.
I was going to say, we need research to realize that, because exactly that's the question. Right? In what ways, in what form, and what kind of grassroots, and how organized, and who is going to get involved, and how does the program look like? All of that is, I think, the matter to be explored, examined, and analyzed.
Yeah, I think, in the beginning of the pandemic, in the first stage, there was a very lively, you know, grassroots involvement as well. Very voluntary also. And now that's very, very hesitant from both sides. So from a voluntary perspective, no one is actually stepping up like we can take a position in this. But also from the central perspective, it's not being thought of that the grassroots can actually provide an infrastructure here. So that's an interesting difference from the first part of the pandemic, I would say.
Yeah, for instance, to give an example about that from some people in my network, I have lots of people working in the music industry, and people organizing music events are experts in administration and ticketing and who is in and secure data. This entire industry has nothing to do at this moment. Thinking about the grassroots approach, they were at hand to help in this huge vaccination challenge in Europe. And, you know, thinking about the Netherlands in particular here, bringing in this related industry that has nothing to do with vaccination, but is very good in administration and has nothing to do, would have been, you know, a huge opportunity. You're right there, Michael. Like, what would it mean? And perhaps that's where we can come in with our expertise to analyze settings where we've had seen this grassroots approach in the beginning or throughout the pandemic, or sustaining that type of approach, and where it has been more centralized, and seeing, you know, what are the effects of these different modes of organizing, and why did they stay the same or did they change? Those would be really interesting questions that I could think of.
Enough work to do for the coming years, Greta. I think we have to finish it here. And so I'm wondering, do you have any final thoughts?
So what I was going to say is, as I listened to what you said just now about the pandemic and the potential role for organizational analysis, I realized that although Selznick talks a lot about cooptation and unintended consequences, and he says that himself, right, that at the end of the day, the TVA was able to do something. And if anything, these negative aspects, they come to light exactly because on average, it was reasonably effective. And it was effective in terms of creating cooperation and systemic thinking and balancing different type of goals and being able to exactly to maintain, as he says, the clothing of a traditional governmental bureaucracy with the spirit of the more agile, dynamic, free enterprise. And all of this, I think, points to the importance of cooperation. And this is exactly, I think, what is central for organizing and what the book indirectly shows that in trying to achieve that, which is needed from whether you're planning a birthday party to whether you're building the pyramids to whether you're trying to deliver vaccination to the whole globe, literally, the ability to cooperate and scaffold the work that goes into working together, all it's important to remain aware of all the kinds of challenges that may seep into this goal.
My final thought is that I really got interest about this way to become an institution. I think it's something that we can discuss a lot, and it's important. And I will say something that Selznick put on the preface that I thought it was very interesting, that words like democracy and socialism might be useful as a utopian calls to action and cemeteries of solidarity, but they do not serve as well as guide to policy. So I think this is very interesting because we have to, our goals have to be clear, and we have to, in terms of organization, we have to think what we are able to do and what we want to do, and we have to be careful what will be our choices and with whom we have coalitions and who will state our goals clear. I think this is something that very interesting and something that goes through the book, and this realism is something that is very interesting to think about democracy and all the great bigger goals that we are talking about.
So some final words from me of a different kind. Thinking about why I did enjoy reading this book and appreciate having spent the past 2 days going through it is that it invited me to think differently about organizations. It made me reflect upon my own, as a researcher, my own approach. And as some of you may know, I always love to go dive into the organization and look at different groups within the organization and how they work together and, you know, the development of projects such as innovation. So I take the organization as a context. And what this book invites me to do is to think about organization as an entity and how that entity is being shaped by different forces, either from the inside or from the outside. And so this is a very different way of looking. And it's it provides like a toolkit how you could do that. It also shows if you really want to do a good job, you need to spend a year in the field. And so it also has a message there, perhaps for that are in charge of coordinating PhD curricula, you know, 3-year PhDs and produce a good social science thesis is really, really difficult. We need time to collect and digest. But that's what I really enjoyed about this book, thinking about our organization as an entity and rather than just a setting.
Yeah, and to me, it's the crossover of this this book. So I'm in a department of public administration and organizational science. These are often two disciplines that are separated, right? So you've got this organization and management, which is in the management schools, and you've got the public administration, which is more on the politics student university. And this is a book that's really a crossway of these two disciplines. And I think this, both the disciplines have very much to offer to each other. There are classics in public administration that are not being read in organization studies and vice versa. And that's something I would take from reading this book. What I also take is that the TVA is a very durable organization. It still exists. It's reachable on tva.com, and we'll be sure to put a link on the podcast site, so you can also check the real life organization and not only the organization of 70 years ago through the book of Selznick.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Finally, we would like to thank some wonderful people for supporting the show. Sarah Audner, Leon Prieto, Hadi Shaheen, Marshall Reiner, Alice Barbosa, Thomas Roulet, Heiko Schmidt, Barton Friedland, Guldem Kara Mustafa, Roberta Bernardi, Marina Timmer, Bernard Hogan, Eddie Hunsinger, Fiona Knight, Peaks Craft, Timothy Paul, Willy Leidon-Wirte, Gabriel Van Bunnen, and Clara Lux. It's easy to support the show, and all you have to do is go to our website, where a donations button will greet you. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you when we present another classic reading on organization theory or management science here on Talking About Organizations.